Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio, a very special TLC review edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 90 minutes, we will be discussing last night's big TLC event at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Only the WWE could deliver a night of excellent matches and still leave you scratching your head saying, I feel cheated. Only the WWE could do that. There's no other wrestling federation on the face of this earth put on a card that featured, truthfully, not one bad match. Not one. And when I say not one bad one, I don't even know if there was one average one. All of these matches were great. It was the booking that destroyed it. When you have an unsatisfactory ending, or you have something overbooked to the point where it's nonsensical, you've lost it, and you've wasted the effort of these athletes who poured their heart and soul into this product last night. And so this is a mixed bag for me. I'm happy because I really enjoyed these matches. There were some of these matches that at times I was saying to myself, this is why I'm a wrestling fan. This is exactly why I'm a wrestling fan. But by the time they got around to the end or certain booking decisions, I'm saying, please don't go there. Please don't ruin this match. Please don't waste the effort these people are putting into the matches with your nonsense. But they can't help themselves. The WWE cannot help themselves. They continually undermine their own product with horrible booking ideas. It's very frustrating if you're a wrestling fan. I talked to several fans this morning who said, I loved a lot of these matches, but there's always a but. But why did they do X, Y, Z? I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. Why couldn't they leave well enough alone? I don't know. I do not know. What I do know is it definitely undermined the product, because had they not done this, this is a stellar A-plus pay-per-view. Even the opening pre-show match was pretty good, even though it was basically just a setup for Big E versus Sami Zayn. We get it. It was still good. Kept getting better and better and better. But there was always that, well, this is a great match, but we're going to ruin it for you. We're going to jump the shark. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're not going to give you a satisfactory ending, to the point where you say, I'm very frustrated. Very frustrated. And it's extremely annoying. So we're going to jump right in to our review of last night's TLC. Before we do that, we would like to welcome our first sponsor here to WrestleChat Radio, which is Inside Heat Sports and Collectibles. Inside Heat Sports and Collectibles feature the best in sports collectibles with weekly Facebook auctions and their own eBay store, and they will soon be opening up their first brick-and-mortar store at Route 23 in Hamburg, New Jersey. They feature weekly card auctions starting at only 50 cents. Inside Heat features memorabilia from all sports and also from the world of pro wrestling, and you can check them out on their Facebook page. You can check them out on their eBay store. And if you're near Hamburg, New Jersey, very, very soon you'll be able to go in and talk to the owner yourself. Check them out and let them be your source for sports collectibles. Anyway, folks, let's get right to it, and let's start out with AJ Styles versus What am I saying? Yeah, they did. Well, we don't want to go into the prelim match. No, we don't want to. And I'll tell you why. Because it was just a setup for Big E to face Sami Zayn. So really, there's no need. So it's McIntyre versus AJ Styles as the opening match. The minute it was the opening match, I knew that AJ Styles was not winning the title. There's no way the opening match is going to feature a major title change like that. So that booking by itself was lousy, because there was no doubt in my mind that there was no title changing hands the first match of the night like that. Not a major title. So I was a little bit downput by that. But man, did they put on a fantastic match. Clearly, AJ Styles still has – AJ Styles has lost nothing. AJ Styles may very well be the Dustin Rhodes of the WWE right now, in the sense that I don't see him slowing down. I mean, he's not ancient, but he's not young. And I don't think he's lost a step. As a matter of fact, I think he might be better now than he was 10 years ago. Drew McIntyre, fantastic job. Everyone involved, a fantastic job. And I'm really into this match. And I'm saying to myself, what a fantastic opening match. And then what happens? During the middle of the match, you have The Miz run down with John Morrison. Drew McIntyre's down. AJ Styles is down. But the bodyguard is still up. And it's a no disqualification match, remember. And instead of Morrison waiting till The Miz was on the very top of the ladder and signal him, now cash in the Money in the Bank, he cashes in the Money in the Bank before he climbs the ladder. Which is totally illogical, totally against The Miz's character, who would never do such a thing. He's supposed to be very devious, right? So the more devious, the better. You climb to the very, very top. You get your hands on the belt, and you say, cash me in. 1 second before you pull it down. So you know for sure that you're going to win. So this ruins the entire match. To a degree, it does. It doesn't take away the effort of the people. But this booking ruins the entire match because it's illogical and it's dumb. There's no way The Miz would do that. There's no way any thinking person would do that. After about another 4 or 5 minutes, Drew McIntyre pulls the belt down. Drew McIntyre remains the champion. If you listened to yesterday's show, you know that was Todd's pick that he would bet his house on. So Todd is currently homeless. And I said to myself, what a fantastic match with a lousy, lousy, lousy ending. Could it not have just been about these two great athletes going at it? And then maybe if you want to have The Miz come down and cash in unsuccessfully, fine. Have him come down when he thinks Drew McIntyre is at his weakest point. And he's wrong. That's fine. But to have The Miz get in the ring where clearly chaos is ensuing, and clearly AJ Styles' bodyguard is still standing right there looming over them, stand on the ring apron and say, we're cashing it in, and then climb the ladder as slow as you possibly can climb, makes absolutely zero sense. And it was at that point that I stopped caring about the match because I said, oh, Jesus, I already know now Drew McIntyre is going to win. They're not going to give it to The Miz. And we already know they're not going to give it to AJ Styles. So now there's going to be the excuse of, well, The Miz ruined it for AJ. In my opinion, it took the excitement out of the match. And I was really disappointed, Mike. I thought, you know, they've overbooked this, which they often do.
Yeah, we've seen him do this stuff. All over and over and over again, overbook things, you know, and they tend to do it. They tend to overbook it, and they did it here. And look, you're right. I mean, the guy, let's see, they had been going a good 10 to 12 minutes, had AJ Styles and Drew McIntyre before, The Miz shows up, right? So,
right.
And of course, AJ had been working on his leg. He had done the whole bit with his calf crusher, with the ladder and all that stuff. And his leg was significantly weakened, and AJ was significantly had some stuff done to him that weakened him some. And see, this is where they lost me here, because he's coming in fresh, right? So he should be able to just right up the ladder, and then, like you said, and then Morrison cashes it in, and then
of course
we see what happens. If you want to have the big guy come and tip over the ladder, fine, do that. If you want to do whatever, but nothing happens until the Miz reaches the top of the ladder. And look, you're right about AJ Styles. And AJ Styles is Dustin Rhodes minus 10 years.
It's really it's amazing. I know he keeps himself in great shape, but wow, he took some bumps. He was full throttle the whole match. There was very few rest holds. I got tired watching them both. They really did a phenomenal, no pun intended, job. Both Drew McIntyre and AJ Styles should be very, very, very happy with their performance, because it was fantastic. And it had me. I'm telling you, it had me. Even though I knew AJ wasn't going to win, I said, something's up, because they're putting on such a hard-fought match. There's going to be a fantastic ending to this. There's got to be something. They wouldn't be going full throttle like this if they knew it was going to be a shit ending. Well, I'm wrong. They're so used to shit endings that they're like, well, I guess we could save this match by going full throttle, because the ending's going to be shit. And sure enough, it's a shit ending. Just like Mike said, the Miz is fresh. Why is he laboring climbing up a ladder? And why would he ever wait until the Money in the Bank was officially cashed in until he climbed to the top? Wouldn't he stand at the top, point down at Morrison and say, cash it in, and then pull the belt down 1 second later, making sure there was no one around that could stop him? And if he saw someone was going to stop him, tell him, don't cash it in. That could have just as easily happened. Instead, we get this really unsatisfactory ending. I don't care if Drew McIntyre wins. I think it undermined his win. And when you fight that hard, you don't want your win undermined. Todd, what was your thoughts on the match?
You're absolutely right there. Like you said about AJ Styles and Drew McIntyre, those two put on an awesome-ass match. You know, like you said about The Miz when he came in, he was the fresh guy. All he would have had to do is climb up on the top of the ladder, throw the briefcase down to Morrison, and hand it to the referee, and just grab the belt right then and there off the ladder.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry, but it ruined a lot of the match for me. Do I still think it was a great performance? Yeah, I do. But it was lousy booking. And you can't have a 4 or even 5-star match when you have lousy booking, unfortunately. So next comes Sasha Banks and Carmella. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how do they pull this off? You can't really hand Carmella the belt at this point without Sasha Banks looking like a very undeserving champion who can never defend her belt. And you can't have Carmella lose. That means the first feud she's had when she's come back as this refreshed character, she's lost. So I'm thinking to myself, well, we're going to see a disqualification. We're going to see a count out. We're going to see something. And that's okay with me. And it was really okay with me about 5 minutes into the match when I'm saying, wow, they are really putting on a sensational match. Carmella's gotten a lot better, and Sasha Banks has picked her game up. Spot on last night. There were some very, very good spots in the match. It felt like a real wrestling match, a real fight. There was no nonsense and stuff that you say, oh, geez, that's not going to happen. Yeah, you had that one spot where her butler or whatever he's supposed to be caught her, her wine server caught her, and then Sasha Banks takes them both down, and or he used, I guess he threw her on and she did a head scissor flip. That's okay. That stuff is fine with me. As long as it doesn't get completely silly, and I don't think it got completely silly. And near the end of this match, I'm saying, wow, they've done a good job. And they even did a pretty good job with the booking in the sense that she got out of the bank statement once. A little help, but she still got out of it. Sasha Banks got caught in her submission. She got out of it. And it looked and felt like a real wrestling match for a title. So I'm into this match, and I'm saying, wow, here we go. But I'm fully expecting, well, we're not going to get a winner, but that's okay because I'd like to see a rematch. At this point, I'm saying, wow, I'd like to see this feud continue at this point. But hold my beer because the WWE has something else in mind, which is just a clean tap out. So there goes Carmella's character. She's cleanly been tapped out by Sasha Banks. It's quite obvious that the implication is she is absolutely not one of the top people. She can't hang with Sasha without getting tapped. And by the way, it's not like she has 9 victories under her belt and you say, well, she's beaten every other girl on the roster, but she just got caught by Sasha. No, she has 0 since she came back. 0 victories. 0 victories, 2 losses. And this one, middle of the ring tap out. And Corey Graves can, you know, try to help his girlfriend all he wants by saying, well, even in defeat, she looks awesome. No, she didn't. She put on an awesome match, but she doesn't look awesome in defeat. She looks like a quitter. I'd have rather seen the wine server jump in and start beating on Sasha to break the hold and disqualification, something, so we could get this feud and keep this feud going because these two work really, really, really well together, way better than I thought they were going to. But once again, I think the WWE makes a questionable booking choice. When you have someone who's putting on great matches like this together, it might be a good idea to say, let's keep this program going. Now, they may still keep the program going, but unfortunately, we've seen her tap. That should be the ending to the program, not the beginning of the program, Mike.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the ending. In fact, if you wanted to make it, you know, if you wanted to keep it going, the best thing to have the match end in a bank statement. Don't have her tap out. Just have her pass out. You know?
That would certainly be better than tapping.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have either one. Have either one. I don't want her losing. I don't want her at this point losing. If they're going to have 3 more matches, why do we need a winner at all?
Right, and that's the thing. And again, hold my beer. I mean, we thought the ending of the Drew McIntyre match, the ladder match was bad. Then WWE says, hold my beer.
Right, and again, this is another great match, Todd. These women put on a very, very good match, only to have it kind of undermined by the fact that one of them is now knocked back down to mid-card status, in my opinion, right away.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about that match with Sasha Banks and Carmella, when she was in that bank statement, I would have her her manager or server get in the ring and break the hold up and get her disqualified. I would have her lost like that, not a tap out or a pinfall. I would just have her lose by disqualification.
Right, because then you keep the feud going. You keep the feud going, and you build the excitement for, can Sasha actually tap out Carmella? Because apparently this guy is always going to be involved. He got involved how many times? That's how they usually set up things where somebody's in a cage above the ring and stuff. Remember those matches? So they can't interfere. You could have had a really good feud with these two because they really do work well together. Way better. This is probably the best I've seen Carmella look in her career. And Sasha Banks did a really, really good job. Really good job. So, yeah, I mean, a great match. Apparently two people who work well together, and you just say, let's just end it so that she can go fight somebody else. Or maybe they're just going to keep on with Carmella, but we've already seen the ending. So I'm not a big fan of that kind of booking, unfortunately. Hurt Business and The New Day. Fantastic match. If there's one thing I don't like about this, it's that I have no idea in the world why Big E at least didn't walk out with them. Again, they're there together. Now, maybe they aren't. Maybe they tape Big E's stuff. I don't know. But to the fans, they're there together. And they don't even he don't even come over to them and say good luck tonight or no, nothing. They're really isolating Big E. I don't know whether they're doing it for a reason or not, but it's weird. And it absolutely kills the feel of The New Day. Now, once again, a fantastic match. Fantastic match from start to finish. And the right ending. The Hurt Business wins. Now, they pull a really weird thing, which I wish they did not do. Just let them win. Well, they pull this weird thing where Shelton Benjamin is setting up for his finishing maneuver, and Cedric Alexander tags himself in and uses his finishing maneuver to be the guy who gets the victory. Shelton Benjamin gives him a weird look, but, oh, well, I'm still the champion. I don't really care. But this is obviously the beginning. Shelton Benjamin turn and face? I don't want to see Shelton Benjamin turn face. And I don't want to see anybody from the Hurt Business break off of the group. You've just barely started to establish them the right way, where people are saying, this is a good group. This is a solid group. And what do? Let's hint they're going to break up. Let's hint that there's going to be division between Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, like we did at the very beginning when Cedric first joined. Come on, folks. It's too early for this. This is something maybe you do 2 months down the road if they still have the belt. But not now. You're telling the story too quick. So once again, I'm saying fantastic match. The right person won. And then I see this and I say, oh, hold the phone. I don't want to see this. Not yet. You shouldn't even be teasing it yet. They should be a cohesive unit where MVP can say these guys are on the same page and then let success go to Cedric Alexander's head and let him be the hot dog. Not now. It's too soon, Mike.
It is too soon, but I'm kind of willing to overlook that because the right team won and the right ending. Because remember, going back to what they did with when they said, you know, we'll take care of, you know, the other group, and what we want to be paid in is in gold, right?
Right.
So this is the right ending. This is them, the three of them holding up those three gold belts is the right ending. So, yeah, it's weird, but it's weird the way they got to it. But it is the right ending, and I'm willing to overlook the weirdness of it in terms of what they did with it, because it's the right.
Here's why I'm not, because I want that ending to be, wow, the Hurt Business are really, really a super team. They are really on the same page. They got beaten a couple of times by the New Day, but they came back. They won the belts. These guys are a cohesive unit. MVP's got all of his ducks in a row, and these guys are going to be tough. I don't want – well, they won the belts, but there's obviously division. There's obviously they're not on the same page. Inner turmoil in the Hurt Business. Not yet. I don't want that yet. Establish them as a cohesive unit who together, extremely tough to beat. And then the chink in the armor comes. Don't give us the chink in the armor the minute they win the belt. Let them go on a tear for a while. Then the chink in the armor can come. It's too soon. Todd, this was a fantastic match, though, as we expected it would be.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty, it was a, an was a pretty good match. But like you said, with Cedric Alexander tagged himself in last night, it looks like they're pushing that too fast for him to turn on his partner. It looks like that.
Either him or the other way around, and it's too soon. It's just way too soon. They can't help but try to tell. They can't help but do too much. That's the thing. The WWE has to fall all over themselves and do too much. You don't have to do all this booking. Just let the match be the match. It's irritating. So then what comes next? Well, the Raw Women's Champion, Asuka, and a mystery partner against Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. And who is the mystery partner but Charlotte Flair? Huge mistake. Gigantic, colossal, glaring, glowing mistake. If you really and truly and honestly wanted to promote Charlotte Flair, bring her back as a surprise for the Royal Rumble. Surprise entrant. Whistle blows, buzzer goes off, and Charlotte Flair comes down. I'm fine with that. The problem with this match was that this was centrally focused on nobody else but Charlotte Flair. It did nothing to help Asuka. It did nothing to help Nia Jax. It did nothing to help Shayna Baszler. This was Charlotte Flair's own personal vehicle, right down to the point where Ric Flair is watching on a monitor backstage. And Asuka's forced to make the hot tag to Charlotte when Asuka's the tag team, is the champion. And what does it set up? Well, any idiot could figure it out. Charlotte Flair and Asuka are now the tag team champions, but Charlotte's going to want her belt. We get it. I don't want to see it. This would have been much better if she won the Royal Rumble as a surprise entrant. Much, much, much better. Now, let me tell you why I know they give Charlotte Flair special treatment. I want you to watch, if you've got your WWE Network, go back and watch that match again. And then I want you to watch a couple of other Nia Jax matches in which she barely sells anything to anyone, even Asuka. Asuka will give her that spinning back fist, and she'll, oh, a mosquito bit me. I'll stumble back an ounce and look annoyed. She goes down like she's hit by a rocket ship when Charlotte Flair hits her. Somebody has told her, hey, you better sell for Charlotte. Period, end of conversation. Because, man, did she sell for Charlotte, which is a mouthful to say. But certainly she did. I was laughing because I'm like, wow, I guess we found the one person that Nia Jax will actually sell to, and it's Charlotte Flair. And you're going to tell me they didn't tell her backstage to do that? Point me out a match where she's done it before. I've seen her fight Asuka. She didn't sell like that. Seen her fight Becky Lynch and sell like that. Boy, Charlotte gets tagged in, and man, oh, man. Oh, that's fine. I'll get knocked off my feet with one shot. I'll go down 3 or 4 times in 30 seconds. She doesn't go down 3 or 4 times in 6 matches. And it really just made it look like, well, Asuka's no big deal. Shayna Baszler's certainly no big deal. And Nia Jax is no match for Charlotte. This was really just a huge vehicle to introduce back Charlotte Flair. That's all this was. And handing her a belt on her first night back is a colossal mistake. If you want, if you're trying to get to Charlotte Flair versus Asuka, then you should have had some miscommunication. After all, they've not teamed before. You should have had some miscommunication leading to Charlotte Flair getting pinned and humiliated on her night back, and she attacks Asuka. That's all. Being the tag team champions doesn't interest me. So now I'm not saying that that Asuka doesn't deserve to be double pinned. That's all fine. And with the amount of women you got in your division, you're probably going to end up with double champions from time to time. But the storyline is so obvious and so clear that people are already looking at it saying, we already know where this is going. And then if you want to think about it logically, what the hell does this have to do with anything we have watched Alana go through for the past 2 months, 3 months? I thought this was supposed to be Lana's big vehicle of well, you're going to see her go through a table every single friggin' week. But at the end of this rainbow, we're going to get a payoff where Lana is going to be successful, which she pinned Nia Jax, but it was a fluky thing, and then she got beat up, right? And I thought for sure we're going to at least see Lana. There's going to be at least something. No. It was almost like, hey, Charlotte's ready to come back. Lana, you're out. She's in. Yeah, but what about the couple of months you spent building me up? Who cares? Charlotte's back. You're cannon fodder. That bothers me. Really does. And it's not even a great spot for Charlotte. The Royal Rumble is a way better spot for Charlotte. There's nothing really physically wrong with the match. It's just that I really disagree with the way they booked this. I really disagree with Charlotte Flair being the mystery partner. I disagree with Lana having nothing to do with it because you've cheated the fans. The fans got emotionally invested in what's going to happen with the storyline with Lana, and then they just said, Charlotte's back, forget the storyline. I just don't think – you can say it's not fair to Lana, but it's not fair to the fans. We wasted our time investing in this, and there's no real payoff, Mike.
It really isn't any payoff. I mean, it would have been much better if we saw Lana. I mean, we put together a scenario on Sunday, right, where Lana comes and yeah, those other two keep the belt. Lana comes in and all that stuff, and we put that scenario together. That would have been an infinitely better scenario, especially if the ending was Charlotte shows up anyway, and her and Lana put Nia Jax through a table. That
right.
would have been an infinitely better spot. Yeah, we want to see her in the Royal Rumble, but if they were going to use her last night, that would have been an infinitely better way to use Charlotte than to have her in the match itself.
I totally agree with that. If you got to use her, I'd rather use her in the Rumble. But if you got to use her last night, if you feel that that's that strongly about using her at TLC, then Lana has to stumble out there, hurt as she can be, and say, I'm not letting my tag team partner down and the woman who took me under her wing. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm not afraid of you. That sells Lana. Asuka realizes, well, of course, she's not. I can't tag her in. She's going to lose, instantly lose. To do most of the match by herself, and after she gets tired and wore down after doing really, really, really well, so you can sell that, hey, Asuka's almost beating these people by herself, the numbers game catches up to her, and she's forced to tag Lana, who does okay for a minute or two, but ultimately she's hurt, she's no match, she gets beaten, and they decide they're going to put her through a table again, and Charlotte Flair comes out to exact some revenge on Nia Jax, takes out Shayna Baszler and helps Lana put Nia Jax to that table. That's the angle, man. They still got the tag team belts, which is great. Because to be honest with you, I don't see Charlotte Flair and Asuka. Well, who the hell's going to beat them? Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke? So I don't know. I didn't like this. The match was fine, Todd. I just don't like this whole booking.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, the match was okay, but I just didn't like how it was booked. Like you said, with the fans, they got cheated. They got cheated out by the WWE, the fans. You know, it's.
I think they really did, and because we invested in the Lana storyline, we got nothing for it—a quick roll-up pin, fluke pin—and that's all we got for it. So let's get on to Roman Reigns versus Kevin Owens. because here is one where I was proven wrong. I said, and I stick by what I said, that I've seen Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns in the ring together a few times, and I've never been overly impressed. I always said, I don't know why, they're both really good at what they do, but they don't work that well together. But I also said that if you're going to do this match and you make it a absolute knockdown, drag-out, hardcore-style match where they're fighting outside the ring and they're going through tables and they're doing all that kind of stuff, that's where Roman Reigns is the absolute best. When he's got to be in that ring doing stuff, like with a technical guy or whatever, Roman Reigns has some weaknesses. When he's just doing this, he looks badass at doing it, and he's very good at doing it. And I'm going to tell you something. This is a very strong candidate for Match of the Year. This was a fantastic match from beginning to end. And the reason it was so fantastic wasn't even about flippity-floppity dangerous moves or high spots. The reason this was such a fantastic match is it told a great story, and both of these people did a fantastic job of showing it on their face. You know, oftentimes a wrestler doesn't even know when the camera's on them. So what they really got to do is they've got to be in the moment. They got to be that character. They got to experience what they're experiencing and say, I have to act like it's real. I'm watching Kevin Owens headbutt Jey Uso off the ladder, and the hatred and intensity in his face looks real. And I'm saying, wow, this is fantastic. The frustration and the anger in Roman Reigns' eyes looks real. These guys interacted so well together in this match. This is everything that professional wrestling is supposed to be. And they did it with zero flaws, zero flaws. At the end of this match, the very first thing I said to myself was, to be able to do a match this complex, and it is complex with you running in at this point, and I'm doing this, and you're doing that, very complex. Timing has to be perfect. Everything's got to be perfect, pretty much, to pull this match off. And they did it flawlessly. This is consummate professional wrestling. This is professional wrestling at its highest level, done perfectly well. Not one maneuver looked like, oh, he was waiting for that, or, oh, you could see he was setting up for that. No, they looked like they were fighting. There was never one moment in time in this match that I said, oh, that's ridiculous. Oh, that wouldn't happen. Thing was right on cue. Everything from the very beginning where Kevin Owens just jumps him and says, F you. Because remember when I said, if someone crosses a line, you can't go out there and start with an arm bar and a head side headlock and say, oh, I know you cursed out my family and did all these horrible things, but I'm just going to try to wear you down with a headlock. No. What did Kevin Owens do? He back jumped him and said, beat your ass. And Roman Reigns and Jey Uso did a fantastic job of making Kevin Owens look like a true badass. He was beating both of their asses raw for 5 minutes. And equally, Kevin Owens did a fantastic job of making Roman Reigns look very resilient and determined. And as a heel, that's important, because now we're taking a look at Roman Reigns and saying, well, he's not a guy who only wins when sneaky things happen, like The Miz. Yes, his cousin is there to help him, but he's a tough bastard. He keeps getting up. He had a lot of things happen to him that you say, I don't know, you get up from that, and he gets up. So now what's happening is we're beginning to see that Roman Reigns is not going to be a man easily beaten for a number of reasons. Number one, on his own, he's tough and resilient and keeps getting up, and he's very determined. But then he always has the threat of Jey Uso, which makes it a million times worse. And they also did another smart thing where they clearly showed there was no way Roman Reigns was going, and the cameras did this. But the cameras are always, you know, the director tells what the cameras want to do. They had a shot where they clearly showed there was absolutely no way Roman Reigns could get in that ring and stop Kevin Owens from winning the title. Kevin Owens was on the second to the top rung of the ladder. Roman Reigns was still unconscious on the floor. And Jey Uso saved it, completely saved his title. No question. The shot clearly showed there's no way on earth he could have got up there in time. And they did that on purpose. So the feeling is Kevin Owens is able to beat Roman Reigns. So Kevin Owens walks away from this match, unlike Carmella and Sasha. Kevin Owens walks away from this match with the feeling that not only can he beat Roman Reigns, he kind of did. He kind of did. He's on the top rung of the ladder, and Roman Reigns is still unconscious on the floor 10 feet away. He's not going to make it up the ladder to stop him in that length of time. If it wasn't for Jey Uso, Kevin Owens is the champion. That's the way that was booked. This was the only match flawlessly booked. This is the correct booking. It wasn't overbooked. We knew Jey Uso was going to interfere. We thought maybe even Jimmy would. But we certainly knew Jey would. And every single interference was only at a critical time. And everyone had its purpose. There was no wasted energy in this match. There was nothing that did not make sense. This was very close to a flawless wrestling match. And I'm very proud to say that every single person on this panel for years has said Roman Reigns is capable of this. When everyone was saying he can't wrestle, we said, oh yes, he can. He's just been given shit to do. But if he's given the right stuff to do, he not only can wrestle, but he understands better than most the psychology of a wrestling match. And Kevin Owens has always been good at that when he has motivation. When Kevin Owens has no motivation, he can mail it in sometimes, like Randy Orton. I don't like this angle. I don't like this concept. I'll just go out and do what I do, and that's all I'm going to do. Last night reintroduced Kevin Owens that we all wanted to see. There was a point in this match when Corey Graves said, I have never seen Kevin Owens like this in my lifetime. He's like a man possessed. Yeah, okay, we've reintroduced a Kevin Owens who should have won the belt. So what are we left with? What's the storyline? The storyline is simple. Roman Reigns keeps getting up, keeps getting up, keeps getting up. But he has an ace in the hole just in case he can't. And he's going to be incredibly tough to beat. And for any one man to beat him is going to be incredibly tough. And we're left with Kevin Owens technically did it. Kevin Owens is that tough. And had it not been for Jey Uso, Kevin Owens would be the champion. So you have cleverly shown that Roman Reigns will take credit for things he didn't do. He's no longer that honorable Roman Reigns who said, well, I realize I would have lost. No, he's going to take full credit for that. You've established these characters tremendously better in just one match. And that is a credit to, yes, the people who booked it, but also to the athletes because they flawlessly pulled it off. And that is not an easy match, I'm telling you, to flawlessly pull off, Mike.
That isn't an easy match, and you're right. It is a potential match of the year. We have to wait and see, but it is a potential match of the year. And here's the deal. It goes a long way to reestablishing him as a badass, as Kevin Owens as a badass. We want more than one guy that when you hear that music, it doesn't matter if he wins or loses, you're going to get fucked up, you know?
Yep.
And we thought at one point it would be Kevin Owens. One of those guys would be Kevin Owens. Then they kind of messed him over a little bit. Now this is kind of rehabbing that type of character where a couple of more matches like this for Kevin Owens, and you're going to say, When you hear that music come on, it doesn't matter if he wins or loses. You're going to get screwed, you know. And that's what we.
And even better than that, I think, is the fact that you've reestablished both of these guys as top stars. Roman Reigns is now the heel. He is the top heel in the WWE. Period. End of conversation. He's the man to beat. Kevin Owens, on the other hand, has lost nothing from this. He's the guy who kind of did beat him through sheer will and determination and guts and you know, never say die attitude, which is what you want from the face, right? But this does not work. I want to emphasize this strongly to people who are listening who maybe don't are kind of new to wrestling or don't really get into the inner workings of wrestling. This match does not work unless both Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens understand what they have to sell, understand what they have to do, and live in that moment. In other words, Roman Reigns has to come in here saying, what I have to establish about Kevin Owens tonight is that I can't beat him. The more I beat him, I think I'm going to make him fear me, respect me. I can't do it. He's not that guy. I can't do it. At one point, Kevin Owens says, you're going to have to kill me. And Roman Reigns literally looks like, I believe it. He's not going to accept. He's just not going to. And I don't know how far I have to go to win. He has to sell that about Kevin Owens, that I'm shocked and I'm angered and I'm frustrated that this guy is this tough and he refuses to quit, just refuses to. Kevin Owens has to sell about Roman Reigns that I've given him everything I got, keeps getting up. And in those rare moments when I think I've outsmarted him, he's got Jey Uso in his corner. Most of the time when Kevin Owens looked like he was going to win and grab that belt, it was he kind of tricked Roman Reigns. Go ahead and give me the spear and then I'll move. You know, that kind of stuff. I outsmarted him. I'm more devious than him. They sold each other's strengths and played on each other's weaknesses. Perfect. They knew their role. And they were sure of it. See, this is when you get a booking and you're like, I'm not sure what you want me to do. What is it that I'm supposed to sell? How am I supposed to handle this? What about my opponent? Am I supposed to accentuate? That's when matches go bad. When you know exactly what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to put the other person over, exploit their weaknesses and you know, show their strengths, and you do it. This is what Shawn Michaels did so well. This is why everyone loved to work with Shawn Michaels, even if he was a little bit of a whatever backstage, is because once the bell rang, he clearly understood, how do I make my opponent, what's my opponent's strength and how do I show it, and what's his weaknesses and how would my character exploit it? And he was great at doing that. Well, both Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens, fantastic facial expressions, fantastic physicality last night. They both took some good bumps. A lot of people took good bumps last night. AJ Styles went through a table, and I thought he was hurt because it looked to me like he didn't hit it right, and I was like, oh, damn, but I guess he's fine. So there are a lot of people took some good bumps last night. Everyone worked really hard, really hard. And, Todd, this could be a match of the year. I don't have anything negative to say about this one. I think the booking was fine. The performances was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed every minute of this match.
Yeah, but, excuse me. You're absolutely right there. Like you said, with that match with Reigns and Owens, like you said, it was a pretty good match. And right there, that's old school booking right there in that match. 100%
old school booking. It's definitely old school booking, and I think it was better than pretty good. I think it was fantastic. I know it's precious in my memory, so that's why I'm saying it's very close to match of the year. I really have to go back and look at some of the other matches that I put down on in my book as potential match of the year. But man, I'm telling you, no matter which one I pick, this is very, very close. Because I don't think I've ever seen recently that I can remember flawless performance like this, where you say everyone involved in this match was flawless, from their facial expressions to their physicality to their timing, everything. I totally bought into this match. I literally felt like they're really fighting. I totally suspended my disbelief of, well, let's see, who would they book to win? I already knew Roman Reigns was going to win. But in a testament to how great this match was, there was a couple of times when I said, Jesus, he's not going to win. they're going to give this thing to Kevin Owens. I really did a couple times. And when you can make me, who was 100% sure yesterday on this show, that Roman Reigns would win because he has to go into WrestleMania as a champion, when you can make me second guess myself and say they must have something else in mind because he can't possibly win. Now, one word, though, that I do want to criticize, and that is this. Don't make your announcers look stupid. And here's how you make your announcers look stupid. When you say, Roman Reigns is on the top, there's nobody to stop him. And then the camera pans down, and you're like, Kevin Owens is back in the ring. You didn't see Kevin Owens. You're standing at ringside. You didn't see him crawl back in that ring. I know why the camera's doing it, because it's more exciting that the viewer doesn't know Kevin Owens is right there. And then when they pan down, he's there. But the announcers can't do that. What, you were blind to that? You're sitting right at ringside. So don't do that. Because that makes it illogical. And then we know you're setting that spot up, and it hurts overall. Keep things logical. So how do we end this? Well, Randy Orton versus The Fiend in a Firefly Inferno match in which you have to be set on fire. Now, maybe they announced that on SmackDown and I missed it. But the very second they said you have to be set on fire, I said, well, there is absolutely no way in God's green earth that Randy Orton is losing this match. Randy Orton is not going to be set on fire. There's not enough of his body protected, even though he wore that jacket. So that was a downer because I already knew The Fiend was losing. Now, contrary to what some people will say, and I know there was a lot of people on the internet today saying, oh, it was cheesy and dumb and horrible and I hated it. There were moments that were really cool, I thought. The one moment I thought was really cool is I didn't think there was going to be anything like the normal Inferno matches. And when The Fiend kind of did that thing where the Kane thing, where he puts his hands down and all of a sudden the Inferno comes on, that Inferno looked a lot better. They had those twisty wires that went up that was on fire. It really looked good. It looked like the pits of hell. You could never do this match in front of a live audience. So now what they did was they combined a cinematographic sort of a match with a live match. Really kind of cool. And there were a couple of really good spots. I thought the rocking chair spot that people are saying was dumb, I thought it was fantastic. Sits Randy Orton in the rocking chair filled with the gasoline, pours the line of gasoline, and then lights the gasoline. And Orton just escapes in time. I thought that was fantastic. And, yes, I know I've said, well, what kind of a human being would set somebody on fire? That's murder. Well, if anybody would ever do it, it would be The Fiend. So everything The Fiend did, I just wish, I'm telling you, I would have picketed Vince McMahon. If I were Randy Orton, I would have said, I have how many years in this company? You have to let him do this. When he set the strap on fire, I said, please hit him with the strap. The wind will part the flame anyway. He has no hair to catch fire. It won't catch him on fire. And it won't even burn him. And boy, would that have looked fantastic if he whipped him with a strap that was on fire. It would have been hugely a great spot. But, of course, they didn't do that. Now they jumped the shark a couple times with a pickaxe and some other things. But then the shark was really jumped, unfortunately. And The Fiend actually catches his jacket on fire after putting the mandible claw on Randy Orton and Orton pressing him up against the Inferno match, I guess the Jets or whatever, catches The Fiend's jacket on fire. So the match is over. Even though The Fiend is clearly dominating, which is actually not a bad, that's not bad. If you wanted to let Randy Orton win it, he certainly won it looking like the loser. He certainly won it and it made it look like, well, that was just sheer unadulterated luck. He was seconds away from being put away and The Fiend isn't hurt. His jacket caught fire. And that's the end of the match. If you set your opponent on fire, it's the end of the match. So Randy Orton lucked out. That's kind of what the ending was supposed to be. But they could not stand it, could they? They could not help themselves. They have The Fiend roll into the ring. Randy Orton clearly wins the match and then goes and gets a jug of gasoline while they replace the Fiend with a dummy. And by the way, it was not that great of a dummy. You could see it was a dummy. And Randy Orton literally sets him on fire while the announcers are saying, don't do that, Randy. Don't do it. Like police wouldn't be down there. Like Randy Orton right now would not be in jail. This, beyond anything else, ruined this match for me. And it was totally unnecessary. The match was over. I guess you're going to do some kind of a thing where is the Fiend dead? So everybody says, oh, well, we got to tune into Monday Night Raw tonight. I get that. I get that. I think it would have been better if Randy Orton got the gas, went in, and when he went to pour the gasoline on him, the Fiend was gone. Or just his clothes were there. That would have been a cool moment, and people would have still tuned into Raw saying, what the hell does that mean? So now tonight, I guess, the tuning into Raw thing is our most popular character, which is the Fiend, may have been killed, so maybe you'll tune into Raw and not embarrass us with the ratings tonight. Well, you've embarrassed yourself with the ending to a pay-per-view that's totally illogical and ridiculous. And totally jumped the shark. If Randy Orton is willing to set somebody on fire in a professional wrestling ring, well, and I don't mean just, okay, a fire match where you say I can set his shoe on fire or something or his jacket. If you're willing to pour gasoline on a human being, light a match and throw it on them. Who's the next guy who wants to fight Randy Orton? There's no way you can make a storyline out of this because you jumped the shark. And then you doubled up on jumping the shark because you did that Monday night. And we called you out for it. And then you said, yeah, I'm going to double down. We're going to do it even worse now. I don't like it. This is going to be a very crucial moment of whether the Fiend and the character survives this. And I don't mean survives this in wrestling terms. I mean actually survives this. Because this could be the moment where fans of the Fiend say, okay, this is just dumb now. I'm not into the Fiend anymore because this is dumb. And if you get that reaction, you've hurt yourself. You haven't helped yourself. I know that was my reaction. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know. I don't know if I can be into this character anymore. Because if that's the case, and he can be set on fire, and he's still okay, and you know he's going to be okay, what are they going to do? There's no more Fiend? There's no more Bray Wyatt? Then how in the hell did Bill Goldberg beat him? And if Braun Strowman is suspended indefinitely for headbutting Adam Pearce, what the hell happens to Randy Orton for setting a human being on fire? Very poorly thought out. Match itself had some cool moments, Mike, and I really was kind of getting into it for a while, but they had to do it. They had to overbook this and ruin it.
You know, and they could have had another cool a very cool reference, you know, when Randy Orton took out that chain, they could have lit that chain on fire, and that would have been a reference to Ghost Rider. You know, from Marvel. Yeah. That would have been a cool reference if they would have chosen to do that. And look, that sweater or whatever he was worn, when I saw him wearing that sweater, I thought, well, of course he's going to be wearing something that's going to be made of Nomex or whatever it is that the firemen wear that would be, you could set it on fire and it wouldn't hurt him, you know. As long as you got the fire
It's like a Kevlar sort of a thing. Yeah, you know, here's an interesting side note on that. I have some experience in this. In a former band I was in, we used to end every show setting my jacket on fire while I held my arms out like a cross. And we would have – the jacket was – it was a special jacket. And my skin in the inside was soaked with Vaseline and stuff. And it didn't come anywhere near my hair. I'd make sure my hair was wetted down first. A song or two before the end, I'd have my hair soaked. And you'd burn for, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds. But what you use, and you don't use gasoline. What we used was brandy, because brandy would catch fire and burn, but then the sugar from the brandy would put it out. So what ends up happening is it burns all the alcohol off, and then when the alcohol is burnt off, it just goes off and it doesn't burn all that hot. You can't just pour gasoline on somebody, you know, unless you really have one of those movie quality things and you're a professional stuntman. But the brandy worked, and I never got burned. But kudos to Bray Wyatt for doing the spot. My concern was, is his hair going to catch fire? I think if they're extensions, I don't know. I guess they are. But whatever, still, they could have caught fire. But he did the right thing. He rolled into the ring and then kind of rolled it out. Whatever was on him was certainly not gasoline. I don't know if it was brandy or some kind of alcohol. Somebody told me rubbing alcohol also will do that and then go immediately out. I don't know. I don't know what was on him. Some people were saying it wasn't even real, but I think it was real. It looked real. I don't think it was drawn on later on. It looked real to me. So I don't know. I don't know what they intend to do. What I do know is this. After a night of very, very, very strong matches, with some horrible finishes and some horrible booking decisions, you let your show close with something so ridiculous. And by the way, you fooled no one, because the dummy was terrible. Whoever did the dummy, it was just terrible. And it made Randy Orton look stupid, and it made The Fiend look stupid, and it made the character look stupid. And at this point in time, people are just like, well, unless you're 12, you're like, I guess I'm giving up on this Fiend thing because this is dumb now. Apparently, he's not just a guy who's manifesting his anger out in the form of another character. Apparently, he's a supernatural creature from somewhere, except the problem is he's a supernatural creature who can't beat Bill Goldberg. So I give up. I don't know what more you're going to do. I don't know what more you're going to do. No Alexa Bliss. I don't know what happened. They've dropped us like a hot potato. Somebody was saying Alexa Bliss needed to take time off, or something was happening. I don't know if that's true. I hope that they didn't get set upon by the powers that be saying, you can't have a man keeping a woman against her will by brainwashing her. That's sexist. If that's the case, then I just don't know anymore. Then quit wrestling. If you can have a man set on fire, but you can't have a woman hypnotized into following a cult leader, then I don't know. What I do know is this was WWE's answer to how do we try to fix the ratings, and I'm not sure it's going to work. Because when I turned off the pay-per-view, my first thought wasn't, wow, those were some really exciting matches. I liked a lot of the performances. I'm going to see what happens on Raw. It was like, oh, God. Now we're going to have to suffer through Randy Orton coming out saying, what I did for the better of the WWE. The Fiend was some horrible creature, and I destroyed it, and then Bray Wyatt's going to appear on the monitor. I don't know. There is such a thing as jumping the shark, and the WWE does it on a regular basis, and you overbook this. The Fiend being caught on fire the way he was fine. I thought Randy Orton's reaction was fine when he realized the man is really on fire, and he seemed to be horrified by it for a minute. And then he like kind of checked him to see if he was all right, if that was it. And then Randy Orton just walked away like shaking his head like, Jesus Christ, that could have been me. That would have been a really good ending. The Fiend lying there motionless in the middle of the ring, Randy Orton walking away, keep looking back going, what the hell, man? What did I just go through? Because psychologically that would take a toll on you. That would have been more effective and make me want to tune in a lot more to Raw than setting a man on fire with gasoline. And I don't want to hear I don't want to hear one person. If I hear one person say, you can't hit a woman, or you can't body shame somebody, or you can't do an angle that's controversial like this, they've set a man on fire. So don't tell me you can't smack a woman. What's worse, smacking a woman or setting a human being on fire by dumping gasoline on them and then purposely lighting a match and throwing it on them? So if you're going to set that kind of precedent, then all rules are off the table, and I don't want to hear anything ever again about politically correct. If premeditated and purposeful murder is okay, then everything is on the table now. And if you say it isn't, you're a hypocrite. You can't go to one extreme and then claim that things that are much less serious than that are taboo. You can set a man on fire, but you can't show a 30-year-old man whose girlfriend is 19. In whose world? Unfortunately, Mike, the ending ruined this match for me, and I was okay with it, but I'm just not okay with the ending.
You're right. You know, I'm just not okay with the ending either. And the fact of the matter is I don't know how they come back, how they bring the Fiend back from this ending, but and we know that Orton wants a little time off. So the ending with him winning doesn't make any sense because, I mean, yeah, it does keep the Fiend strong, but we know that he's going to be gone for a while, for a short, for a while. Then there's that. And you're right about, I mean, look, I said it before when the Bludgeon Brothers were going around and it was the Usos and stuff, and they decided not to have the Bludgeon Brothers even menace Naomi, you know?
Yeah.
That was a downfall. And now seeing this, you know, seeing them do this, and now we know what USA has told them, that basically they want to return to the to something akin to the Attitude Era. Well, that's what was going on. You know, men throwing women around hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? I think we lost Mike somehow. Anyway, yeah, listen. Everything's on the table now. You see what happened. The USA Network brass put their foot down and said, we want adult content, and all of a sudden it's okay to set people on fire. I just don't think it helps the character, and I just don't think it helps Randy Orton, and I just don't understand why Randy Orton has to get over on Bray Wyatt every single time. That's another thing. If you're going to make the Fiend kind of strong, I know he didn't really lose. It's not like he got pinned or submitted, but still, at some point, he's got to get a couple of victories, Todd, or the character goes away.
I mean, absolutely right there. Like you said, with the Fiend right there, I got to go with you on that one, with that part, with him getting burned like that. You know, I just didn't like that part, really.
I just don't see why it makes any sense. Anyway, if you have to rate this pay-per-view, it's very difficult. Because seldom have I seen a pay-per-view that had better matches in the ring. I mean, literally people trying and busting their ass and really, really doing a good job. Probably the best since the pandemic I've seen the WWE do. All of these matches were really good. Some of them were better than good. A couple of them were fantastic. More than a couple, really. Three of them were fantastic. But they overbooked it, or they booked it in a weird way that was unsatisfactory when the endings came, to the point where they almost were saying, we're going to give you what you want, but we're going to take a little of that away from you. I don't know why they keep doing that. They're undermining their own product when they do it, and it's very frustrating. Very frustrating as a fan to say this was a great match between AJ Styles and Drew McIntyre, and the whole cash-in thing ruined it. But it did. very frustrating to say, wow, Sasha Banks and Carmella overperformed. Both of them were fantastic. And I'd like to see more of this. And WWE saying, nah, we're putting an end to this right now with a submission loss. Okay. The Fiend and Randy Orton being in that bitter match, you know, you couldn't go one-on-one, or you couldn't have had Randy Orton win, but rethink, well, my God, I accidentally set a man on fire. I mean, I think it would have been more effective if Randy Orton literally came out after winning that match and walking away without setting Bray Wyatt on fire and said, what happened last night was the worst thing in my career. I watched a man get set on fire. And I had to ask myself, is it even worth it? Is it even worth it to get a victory because a man has been set on fire? I don't know what the condition of Bray Wyatt is. All I know is maybe we took this too far. And then have Bray Wyatt appear on the screen like nothing happened at the Funhouse. You know, and really Randy Orton be like totally freaked out, saying that that's not possible. It's not possible. Because then you've sold the Fiend again, and you've sold Bray Wyatt that, well, I guess you're not going to be able to really beat him. And certainly, Randy, you didn't do it. You thought you did, but you didn't. No. Instead, you had Randy Orton attempt murder. So that takes away that. The tag team championship match was just a showcase for Charlotte Flair. Not the best showcase you could have came up with, so that takes away from that. The Hurt Business winning, and then instantly, oh, we see dissension in the ranks. That's a rushing story. I don't like that. Let me tell you how good this pay-per-view was. With all of those flaws, and those are serious flaws, WWE, it's still an A. This was an A-plus pay-per-view waiting to happen. And only the WWE can blow an A-plus pay-per-view, and they did it. And it really probably should be an A-minus. But I love the Roman Reigns Kevin Owens match so much, I'm going to give it an A. Let's see if Mike is back with us now. Mike, what's your ratings?
I'm going to go ahead and give it that A-minus because of those flaws. You know, if they hadn't had those flaws, it'd have been an A-plus. That's how good, that's how good this pay-per-view was, all right? That's how good it was. If they hadn't had the flaws drug it two other grades down for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's a shame because you don't often flirt with an A-plus pay-per-view like that. And to have it be not the performances that killed it. You know, usually you say, well, it's seven matches. Four of them were good, two of them were average, and one of them sucked. So the one that sucked brought down the average. No, nobody brought down the average. Everybody in that ring did a fantastic job last night. Everybody. It would have been A-plus all the way had it not been for these booking flaws. So it had nothing to do with the athletes. It was A-plus all the way with their matches. Their matches left to just being the matches that they were, 100%. But we talked about the issues, and they're real. And the WWE has to take a step back and say, why did we not have the best pay-per-view possibly of the year and maybe of the last couple of years with this, with such great performances? And the answer is you booked it badly. In many instances, you booked it badly. Todd, what's your rating on the TLC pay-per-view?
I gotta go with you there. I gotta give it an A.
So we all enjoyed it. We just feel that it was overbooked in spots. It was poorly booked in spots. Some of the conclusions were unsatisfactory as far as the way they were achieved, and that's a shame. It's a shame. Raw tonight should be very interesting, though, because I promise you this, the fit that USA Network threw, and I'm being told it was worse than reported. They reported that USA was very upset and wanted a return to more adult content. I was told USA said, we'll pull the plug on this in a heartbeat if you guys don't straighten your act up. If that's the case, two things going to happen. One is the WWE is going to straighten their act up because they can't afford it right now. They're under a contract. And if they lose that contract, can they take that show to Fox? Maybe they could. I don't know. They can probably take it somewhere. But then right now, that's not what the WWE wants. Their shareholders don't want to hear that. So we'll see what ends up happening. But please, WWE, we said it last night. We said it yesterday, I should say. Adult content is fine. Silly content is not. It is not adult content to say, I chopped the head off a guy backstage and used it as a bowling ball, and he's fine now. He's like Jason Voorhees. He's back to normal. That's not adult content. That's stupid. Adult content is what happened last night with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns literally beat the hell out of each other to the point where it was looking like both of these guys were going to the hospital, mercilessly hitting them with chairs and tables and everything under the sun. That's an adult angle. That's all we need. We don't need silly. We need adult. There's a difference. Silly is childish, actually. What you did last night may be violent, but in a way it's childish because adults look at that and say, oh, that's dumb. Only kids look at that and say, oh my God, what happened to the Fiend? No, adults look at it and say, why am I watching this stupidity? See, that's what you have to be careful of. Don't convolute what adult means. Adult angles means somebody's trying to take away Aaliyah from Murphy, or somebody's trying to claim Murphy's having an affair, or he's not really into Aaliyah, or Roman Reigns bringing up families and things like this. These are adult situations. Soap operas are filled with adult situations, affairs, tragedies, double crossing, betrayals. Nobody sets anybody up purposely on fire. I mean, I guess you do if you're doing Game of Thrones or something like that, but that's medieval times. That's not modern times, and it's not based on we're supposed to be athletes in a ring having a real wrestling match. So rethink some of those things. Mike, I think they would be better off reestablishing the definition of what adult content is before they go forward here with the USA Network.
Right. Adult content is what Dallas did when he did the whole Who Shot JR deal, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that was a murder thing, but in the purview of the storyline, they carried it over. It was a cliffhanger, and they carried it over to the next year where it was for that whole summer, it was the talk of the whole world, basically. And that was a One-hour soap opera.
But you got to remember when they hit Steve Austin with a car. That's adult.
Yep.
Because, well, he wasn't going fast enough to kill him. He didn't run him over. He just kind of booted him with a car. That's adult. They did that with Elias. That's adult. Setting somebody on fire. You might as well shoot him. You may as well just have to say, okay, we're having a match, and whoever gets the gun on the pole gets to shoot the other person dead. Is that a match you want to see? No. So they've got to be careful, Mike. The adult content is fine, but they got to redefine what adult content means in the context of professional wrestling.
Right. And look, there are a lot of people that didn't like the whole Brian Pillman gun angle, but that was an adult angle. You know?
Yeah, and it worked. It worked. I liked it. I'll tell you why. Somebody breaks into my house, is going to try to do harm to me or my family if I got a gun. So you could relate to it in a wrestling ring. That's totally different because it wasn't in a wrestling ring. I just don't want to see a match where they say, well, this guy's purposely setting someone on fire, and then when the fire didn't do enough damage, he pours gasoline on a human being and sets him on fire. I don't want to see any more of that. I think that's dumb. And again, I just don't think if Bray Wyatt comes back and his character is fine, it almost hurts the Fiend. Because then people say, okay, this is just a dumb, this isn't anything I want to follow. See, adult angle would be, this man has multiple personalities. And one of his personalities is really psychotic. And that's where he manifests all of his anger and all of his frustration and all of his hate. And when the other Bray Wyatt can't take it anymore and can't swallow it anymore, and it builds up inside him, the fiend comes out. And when the fiend comes out, this is a very vicious, violent man. There are people like that. There are people like that. They snap. They're fine, and then they snap. And when they snap, they're not the same person. And it takes 3-4 police officers to try to, you know, wrestle them down to the ground. That's an adult angle, because you can say, well, as weird as it is, there are people like that. There aren't people who get set on fire and burn for 8 minutes and then they're fine. That would be a supernatural creature. If you're a supernatural creature, then I don't know how you can possibly ever be beaten. Because nobody else in the Federation is a supernatural creature. It's a problem, WWE. Redefine adult as it, in the context of pro wrestling, and you'll be fine. You came close to an A-plus pay-per-view last night, and you overbooked it. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We will be back. Oh, by the way, Merry Christmas to everybody, because we won't be back here until Friday. So Merry Christmas, and we'll see you Friday with more Wrestle Chat Radio.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.